Do you ever find yourself feeling lonely? Today we're going to be talking about the very important topic of loneliness, that even if you're in a relationship, we can find ourselves feeling lonely, and what you can do about it. If you'd like to find out more about how you can improve your relationships or find the relationship you want, head over to therelationshipmaze.com. You can also take our free online conflict style quiz and discover your argument style in relationships. And press subscribe right now. Welcome to today's podcast. And today we're talking about the topic of loneliness.
Yeah, so what's the difference between loneliness, solitude, being alone? There is a difference, isn't there? Because there's a qualitative difference between making the conscious decision to sometimes spend time on your own, to read a book, to not talk to other people, to listen to some music, for example. That's very different from actually involuntarily being on your own and missing the company of other people, which is what I would describe as loneliness.
Even in the way we talk about things, you know, sometimes we talk about enjoying our own company, which is very different from saying I feel lonely. So, I mean, often the expression I'm enjoying my own company is almost like you have company, but you're not on your own. Whereas when you feel very isolated, that's very different. And I think, you know, this is a growing problem that we see in society as society has changed, that, you know, when people are working from home, I think it started in the pandemic to a lot larger extent, although obviously it happened before too. But I think also with the way that we meet people, it's like if we're working from home, we're not connecting with people, it's more difficult to meet people. You know, with just the style of life, even shopping, a lot of shopping is now online. So not even having to go out to the shops, not even speaking to somebody in a professional capacity in a shop, for example, can add to that sense of loneliness for a lot of people. And I think with older people too, and this has been something that's been a huge issue for a while, and if anything, I think is often getting worse, is when someone gets older and maybe a lot of their friends have died, and they find through no choice of their own that they find themselves on their own. You know, that can be a huge issue with that real sense, like you said, of not voluntary being on your own, but that almost loneliness being put onto you. However, it's not just the absence of other people, because I've certainly worked with a lot of people who say they feel lonely even though they're in a relationship, or they feel lonely even when they're out with friends at a bar or a restaurant. So loneliness is something that we can experience not just when we are physically on our own, but the sense of somehow not being able to be part of that group that we might physically be in at that time. But this is still a sense of being lonely.
So what you are describing then is a lack of connection, that you might be in the presence of others, but you don't feel connected to them. You don't feel that you have a sense of, affinity or closeness to other people.
Yes, I mean, I've just come across a lot of people who have said this, that despite the fact they have a lot of people they go and spend time with, they don't feel, maybe that closeness, maybe that connection, where they feel that maybe the other people don't really care about them, so they feel that sense of isolation. So people can feel isolated even when they're at a party, which sounds bizarre, but you know, that is an experience that some people do have.
Well, it makes sense within the context, if we're thinking about attachment styles, if we're thinking about earlier experiences that somebody might have had in their life where they felt that they weren't seen by their parents, for example, where there wasn't a response to their emotional needs, where there wasn't enough care or love expressed. Then this, of course, gets carried forward, doesn't it? It gets internalized, first of all, very much as a message of maybe I'm not worthy of attention, I'm not worthy of care and love. So the child internalizes that. And that creates already a kind of distance in future relationships potentially as well, an expectation, a prediction, or an underlying assumption that other people are not here to connect with me. They're not interested in me. I'm not of interest to them. I'm not worthy enough, etc. So maybe that comes into play here. What do you think?
I think absolutely. It's sort of some of these early experiences that may lead to that person not feeling that people really care about them, or not feeling that, you know, there's that connection. I think in like later life, when we're adults,
mm-hmm.
sometimes I've found this described as being where you might often be with other people, but you don't feel that those people, like, for example, share the same values as mm-hmm. you. So they're like different.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't really feel that connection. So you feel even more isolated because you feel a sense of difference. And very frequently, that sense of difference, I think, comes from what you're talking about, those early attachment experiences where we're having a sense that, you know, basically, and I think also that's when we grow up, we have that feeling that we have to be a certain way. So we get these messages from outside, from friends, from family, from school, from media, from the society, which says, you should be behaving in a certain way, you should be living in a certain way, you should aspire to have a certain type of life. And what happens is we end up living this self, which is sometimes called the conceptualized self, which is essentially the way we feel we should be, and lose connection with who we really want to be, or who we feel we are. And so we can be out with a group of people and living this sort of way we feel we should be presenting ourselves, but that's not really us. And we have that feeling that it's not really us, and that we're not able to kind of be part of that group, because that group represents what we feel we should be rather than what we are.
Yeah, there's something here about the gaze of others that comes into this, as you know, as I'm listening to you, how people look at you, because I think what we all need is to be mirrored. We need to have a sense of, you know, connection is being created through being mirrored. We can see that other people mirror us back in the way that they respond to us, in the way that they look at us, in the way that they react to us. We need to be mirrored. We need to be validated by other people. We need to have a sense of that other people think of us as worthy, as having something interesting to say, or being a worthy person in general. And we need to have a sense of empathy. And if all of these qualities are not there, then we're not feeling connected to others, or we feel that others are not really there for us.
Yeah, what exactly do you mean by mirrored?
Okay, so, mirroring is just one stage of what I would describe a kind of an attunement, affective attunement by others to me. So I need to have a sense of that other people can have a sense of what's going on with me. That if I'm sad, for example, I can see that the other person can respond to my sadness by showing me, reflecting back my sense of sadness. Either they do it verbally, or they do it through gestures, or they do it through their body posture. There's a sense of the other person gets me. Yeah, they can kind of respond to my feelings. They can tune into me. They have a sense of who I am and what I am experiencing. That's what I would describe as mirroring, or affect attunement, which is a slightly more complex process. So they can reflect it back. They can let me know that they know that I'm feeling sad. They can tell me, oh, that's terrible that you feel so sad. Yeah, they can express empathy for my feelings. So all of that creates a sense of being seen by others, being felt by others, not just seen, but actually felt and experienced by other people. And if I don't have the quality of that connection, this is why I think, you know, as you say, you can be in a relationship and still feel lonely. If my partner never offers me those qualities, then they're not really experiencing me as a full person, are they?
No, I just thought it was useful to clarify, because sometimes mirroring also means, well, in terms of responding to the person in kind of like a similar way.
Oh, no.
So, but in this case, it's showing that empathy, showing the acknowledgement, or showing some sort of reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so absolutely. So having that acknowledgement, some sort of validation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, that is really important, that that we have that in relationships.
Mm. And of course, you know, we need to have that. And we also need that to build relationships in the first place. Because how do we build close relationships? I mean, you know, if I talk to somebody in the supermarket, that's great, you know, and that gives me a sense of, ah, that sort of feels warm and, you know, and important. But if I never ever talk to this person again, I'm not really building relationship, yeah, with them. And that is what I need. I need to have people in my life who I build connection with. I'm a human being. I need and thrive off relationships. If the quality is impaired to the level of just saying hello and goodbye, so to speak, or very scarce exchanges, which are not of that much emotional value to me in terms of creating connection, then I might start to feel lonely. Yes.
Yes, and I think also what's really important here is that there are two people or more than two people involved, and mm-hmm. that loneliness, that sense of loneliness, doesn't necessarily come from the other person not mirroring or not kind of acknowledging.
Mm, sure.
Because the question is as well, is how much do we express this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes people may not know that we feel sad, because a lot of people,
yeah,
you know, feel they can't express that. So they feel sad inside and they expect that other people will see this.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, there's this whole sense that they have to put on a brave face, they have to put on a happy face. I think there's even a song about that, so yes. Put on a happy face. And, you know, and I actually wondered when you mentioned as well the phrase, well, if somebody's sad, or you might say, well, it's terrible that you feel sad. I'm wondering if as well, by saying terrible, at some level, it almost feels that it's almost something that you shouldn't feel. That, because we have this in a lot of our language in society that, you know, somehow feeling certain emotions, difficult emotions like sadness and more challenging ones, is not okay. And that actually part of the thing is, in order to feel that connection, we have to be willing to express this to people that we know we feel safe with. And and I suppose that's the thing, is like, obviously, we're not going to go down the street and just go up to everyone and cry and kind of ask them for a hug because we don't know them. But you know, to those people that we want to build connection with, we have to have that courage to be able to, and being willing to be able to share some of these feelings.
That's such a good point, because that implicit in all of this is an underlying level of trust, a sense of, can I believe that other people can tolerate my difficult feelings? That's often the issue with loneliness, this sense of there isn't anyone who can really tolerate me as a person, because I'm not a tolerable person. I'm not likable. I'm not interesting enough. I'm boring. There's nothing about me that another person really would want to know about me, would want to kind of relate to. So that's where it then becomes this vicious circle. If that's how you approach relationships with others, then of course there, you know, a connection cannot be formed in the first place, because they don't get to know you. They can't. There's nothing here that you offer in terms of for another person to be able to connect with you, which then in turn reinforces this underlying belief that I'm not interesting enough, I'm not lovable enough, etc., etc. So it's a vicious circle.
Yes, and I think that's the root of this is very frequently is not knowing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, for other people to know us, we have to kind of know us. And a lot of the time we're so busy putting on this way that we feel we should be. I've come across this with a lot of people where there's a disconnect between like thinking they don't really feel they fit in, but that's often because they're putting on this face. And for somebody to know us, we have to have a sense, well, first of all, that we are okay as well to be known.
Mm.
And if we've spent so much time having that belief that I'm not worthy of being known, I'm not worthy of respect, which again probably comes from early attachment experiences and also through other experiences through life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's many different theories around this.
Sure, yeah, not
these life scripts that we develop, you know, in a transaction analysis model.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, if we're not able to kind of feel that we're okay, we're not going to essentially be able to acknowledge ourselves, and we never feel that connection because we're being acknowledged for something that we're not by other people, because that's what we're putting across.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a very often the loneliness is involuntarily created by a lack of connection with others, because there's an underlying belief that we're not worthy of connecting with by others. And also often what I hear from a client who experience loneliness is that they have a very distorted perception of other people's lives. So it's this idea of like you're walking down the street at night, you look through the window, you see these happy families sitting around a kitchen table, they seem to laugh. So they create, very often people create these ideas, these stories in their mind about what life is like, what life should be like, what other people's relationships might look like, with a very idealized, sugar-coated view of life and connectivity in life and relationships in life. And of course, that's not true. Everyone struggles at some point in their life with their relationships. That's normal. That's human. So it gets there's often this kind of distorted view of what it should be like, this feeling of being connected with others, being in groups with others, you know, what that experience should be like. And of course, if you aim for that, you're going to be disappointed because that's not how it works. There will be, you know, there are always challenges.
Absolutely. So that, again, connects to that conceptualized self, that there's that way that we should be, that, yeah, you see other people always out at parties, always being invited out by friends, and you're not. So you feel there's something wrong with you. And you feel if you have to make that first step and phone your friends, that it's they don't care enough about you because they're asking other people out. So it's something about you. So you feel very much on your own. So I think, you know, first of all, it's an exploration of what it is within ourselves that leads to this feeling of loneliness. What are our self beliefs? What are our kind of beliefs about our own sense of being okay? How do we acknowledge that? And I think that's probably one of the first places to start when we experience a lot of feelings of loneliness.
Because it's a feeling, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's not a reality as such. It's a feeling that gets generated by you.
Yeah, well, I was just looking on the Mind website, and it was saying that loneliness is not a type of mental health issue. It's not a mental illness.
No.
Well, I think the question is, well, you know, something like anxiety, which may be considered that, what is the difference? Because loneliness is wrapped up with other feelings. I think being on your own obviously isn't a mental health condition. But when you experience regular feelings of loneliness, that brings with it anxiety. It brings with other things. So I think, you know, very much loneliness can be as challenging, if not more challenging for some people, than anxiety. I mean, it really is a huge issue.
But yeah.
It, like I said, it brings with maybe sadness, depression, anxiety. So it kind of, it's this whole conceptualization. Because with loneliness, it's not just a feeling. It's also what we do in our minds that gives us that sense that other people aren't there. I'm on my own.
It's a state of being. You're absolutely right. It's a state, and it's a terrifying state of being, because it's the worst, isn't it? As human beings, we're born to connect. We're born to bond with other people. We're always seeking connection with others. We need it for our own survival, so to speak. So being lonely, feeling lonely, is one of the worst and most disabling experiences, particularly for people who are profoundly lonely, who have no one in their lives. And, you know, I haven't worked with many clients who literally had no one in their lives, but I have worked with some clients who didn't, whose parents weren't available. They've never been available in the first place. They might be dead. There are no friends. There's no connection with colleagues. There's just you and your thoughts, your feelings, your experiences. And it's terrifying. It's really absolutely terrifying. It's, I think it's one of the most profoundly horrific experiences that you can have, really, when you feel completely isolated. So this extreme end of loneliness. But it is, it can be changed, of course, because you're not born lonely. You know, you feel it, and you feel it for a number of reasons that we've just talked about. You have this feeling, you have this state of mind, you have belief systems around that, which always go back to this profound sense of there's something wrong with me. So that is always, with loneliness, that's always the starting point to see what is it in my experiences, what leads me to believe, to think that that other people don't want to be in my company.
Absolutely. And I think a very important part of working through loneliness is we have to be willing to put ourselves in a situation where we will feel uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
where we may feel anxiety,
mm-hmm.
where we go and speak to people. And, you know, dealing with the social anxiety around that is often the key thing. I think certainly a lot of people that I've worked with who experience loneliness, there is also that social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So that discomfort about speaking to people in groups, speaking to people they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to really work through anxiety is we have to be willing to be in situations that feel uncomfortable, but they're not dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But our brain is telling us, because the amygdala in our brain is firing off, saying, you know, risk, risk, danger, danger, because mm-hmm. that's that part that's evolved to look for risk.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no danger. But we experience that feeling in our body.
Mm.
And then our mind starts telling us, well, you know, what if they don't like me? What if they don't, you know, whatever it might be.
Mm.
And that's because of these warning signals in the body.
Mm.
And it's by gradually allowing, being willing to put ourselves into those situations that we can start to reteach our brain that actually, you know, we can tolerate those feelings. And when we learn to tolerate them, we can find connection. And mm-hmm. I think there are many groups around that are useful to join, like there are meetup groups, for example. And actually, you know, a thing with anxiety and loneliness is, you know, one strategy is doing some physical activity and finding a group where maybe people share this physical activity is great. You know, initially, you don't even have to speak with them. You know, it could be going to a gym class. It could be going on a walk with other people. You know, just the fact that there's other people there and you're doing exercise, which helps you to feel better in your body, can help you to find that sort of connection, because you're doing a similar interest. You have a shared common goal when you're doing that activity together.
Mm. Yeah, so there's something about learning to, as you say, to kind of, to tolerate, is that the term, to kind of expose yourself to these situations and learn and kind of noticing what you're experiencing in these situations, noticing that you're not actually physically threatened by these situations, and learning to almost reframe, think differently about, feel differently in these situations, to have different experiences. Because only if you have different experiences can you learn something different. It's a sort of chicken and egg situation, isn't it? When you learn, for example, that the underlying intentions that you had previously ascribed to others, that they look at you and they look at you in a negative way, might not be true. Yeah. So if you go into a situation, a social situation, and actually imagine that everyone who you're talking to, who you're engaging with, has positive intentions, that's a very different, from the outset, a very different experience then, isn't it? It opens up something.
Well, I think what can be even easier than that is you go into a situation and you think, these people may be feeling anxious. How can I make them feel more comfortable?
Yes, that's good, because yeah.
Essentially, it can be very difficult to suddenly think other people think positively of you.
Mm.
But if you've realised that actually maybe these people also are worried about what people think of them.
Mm.
And I want to go and help them feel comfortable. Because
mm.
we need to get out of our heads and just think about putting ourselves in the situation.
Mm.
And that thing about tolerating, well, that's in CBT, it's often talked about that it's not about trying to get rid of the feeling, because we can't. We can't suddenly change it, but we learn we can tolerate it. And over time, that may change it. It may go away.
Mm.
But I think, first of all, realising that those thoughts about what do other people think, will they like me, that they are your thoughts that your mind is giving you.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not reality. You've learned these at some point in your life.
Mm-hmm.
but they're just thoughts because of maybe attachment experiences when you're younger, because of maybe, you know, different experiences as you're growing up. But remember, this is what your mind tells you to help, to try and get you to avoid these situations, because, you know, mistakenly, your brain is thinking there's some danger, some risk. But it's just an, you know, it's like your brain has mislearned this thing, and, you know, we can reteach our brain. And part of that is confronting, being willing to be in these situations that are challenging. So you can speak to people and have anxiety. You can be in a group of people and have a sense that maybe they don't, maybe they're thinking that they don't connect with you, but remembering that's what your mind is telling you, but it's not what they are thinking.
Yeah, so it's like having this kind of overactive checker system, so to speak, in your brain that is very quick to fire off danger signals. And if you think of that checker system, that serves you very well in lots of different situations. It makes sure that you don't get run over by a bus, for example. So it's a good thing that you have it, and you can notice that you have it, and it serves you well. But just also notice that it might be a little bit over-eager at times, your checker system. It might just sometimes ring false alarms. It might be oversensitive. It's highly attuned, so to speak. So it's kind of bearing this in mind, noticing, oh, my checker is telling me that I'm at risk here, but actually this is okay. I'm not. Yeah, there's no danger here in this situation. So it's kind of befriending that alarm, that inner alarm system that you have. And yeah, that takes some practice. That doesn't happen overnight, but it can be, you know, but it can be practiced. It can only be practiced, however, in situations that you do experience as dangerous, so that you learn, that we relearn, so to speak, that these situations are actually okay.
And also having some one-to-one therapy can be a really useful way to help get the support that you might need to discover that willingness to be in those situations. So I do recommend, you know, that can be a really useful thing to look for. Find some good counselling or therapy just to help you through that. So we're going to finish up today. Hopefully you've got some things you can take away. And if you know anybody who is feeling or experiencing loneliness, it's taking that time to connect with them, because you can really make a difference in somebody's life. And the same if you're experiencing this, taking that proactive approach and joining some groups, doing some activities and just getting out there, or even being with nature. Some people as well find spending time with animals is a way that they can also feel connection. So it doesn't even have to be people, but just finding a way to connect is so important. So please tune in next time and press subscribe right now. And we look forward to speaking with you next week.
Take good care until then.
Bye.